Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to episode number 50. Kirk and I have a very, very, very special guest today, Tony Vidler, and he is going to be talking today about the fee-based advice model and how you should be looking at yourself and how you value yourself. Now, he is an advisor to the advisor, speaker, thinker, coach. He focuses on helping business professionals build more profitable advice businesses. So, Tony, why don't you tell everybody where you're at today and give us a little bit more of your history, please.
I'm based in Auckland, New Zealand, Australian by birth, moved over here 27 years ago, went into financial services as soon as I got to New Zealand and began work as a tied life insurance agent for one of the mutual companies. Did that for a few years, then moved into management and then opened up a practice with my business partner, which we built up over the course of about 11 years. Had about 25 staff, 6,000 clients. We're working in multiple business lines, fire and general insurance, investment and insurance broking. We were doing fee-based financial planning, chartered accountant on the payroll, providing taxation advice and so on. So we built that up over a period of time, did reasonably well out of that. And then I sold my share of the practice to my partner. After I did that, I went to work for an institution, did that for a couple of years and decided that once I got to the point of being general manager of their investment division, I decided I really didn't like working for institutions anymore. So I jumped out of that, hung my shingle out as a consultant and coach, and I've been doing that for nearly 8 years now, I think. And certainly for that entire 8 years, I've only been working on a fee basis. Before that, I had been working on a fee basis and commission basis, and I'm very comfortable with charging clients both and explaining why and how that is appropriate. And I'd been doing that since about 2003. So that was at the forefront of moving into fee-based work in financial services in New Zealand anyway, because at that stage it was entirely unregulated and the entire industry was built upon commission sales on product movement.
I like the fact that you said that you feel comfortable doing fees and commissions. That's something that we here in the States, and I know in Canada, there are some issues with that. There are people who hold themselves out as fee only, and you know they're putting commissions in a very negative light. But before we jump into that, because I do want to dive into that a little bit more deeply, why do you think, in your experience, since you've been on both sides of the tracks here, why do you think value is such a huge challenge for advisors?
I think there's a couple of reasons for it, but largely it's cultural and historic. For decades in our industry, all the value has been placed in the product. The institutions are focused on simply moving product, and the consumers have learned and been trained over the decades that all the value is in the product itself and the product performance, and the advisors get remunerated from the product, by the product, and the advisor is sort of incidental to the process. When you look back over the last 30 to 40 years, the advisor is almost incidental. They merely move product for everyone. And as a result, we've got generations of advisors and generations of consumers that have been taught that the advice component is actually the lowest value part of the process. The product is the most valuable part, which, of course, we know is not true. Mm-hmm. The product is actually incidental. It's a mere tool in achieving an outcome. The real value is the coaching and the advice work and the behavioral change that goes with it provided by the advisor.
Kirk, didn't you have something that just happened to you recently that was, you know, really along the lines of what Tony's talking about?
Yes, actually, one of our clients decided to question me about, they'd asked me for, you know, hey, I want to make sure we're connecting, you know, a couple times a month and talking about strategy and getting help with integrating their brand, which we had just done for them. And I sent an invoice or proposal, sorry. And they worked backwards to try to figure out how much I was charging per hour. And they didn't like the number. And they asked me about it. And they said, I don't charge that much money. And I said, well, who cares? And I mean, I didn't say it like that, but I was thinking that. I said something else. But and then they rebutted with, well, and they were just really quiet. And they were like, geez, I don't know. I don't get this. And I said, well, are you paying me for what I know or for how much time I spend working for you? Because what I know is way more valuable than how much time I spend on something. So why does it matter? And I think that's the same predicament that advisors are in, which is how do you do values-based selling? And there's a great book by an author, Alan Weiss, and called Value-Based Selling. It's a great read if advisors want to go there. But we're going to have Tony Vidler go through this today, and he's got some brilliant ideas. They're really, really simple, which I think is the best part of what he's going to be sharing with you guys today.
Of course, that comes from being Australian. We are very simple people. Just want to pick up the point about the hourly rate. You would have all, everyone that's listening to this would have all seen that wonderful old thing that floats around from time to time where there's a sign outside a business that says you can have fast, cheap, or good. Pick any two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everyone's seen that, and it's a classic, and it's absolutely true of how we should value ourselves as advisors. And when that challenge of your hourly rate comes up, and it comes up for everyone regardless of what rate they charge, if you charge $50 per hour, somebody will complain about it and think it's too much.
Mm-hmm.
If you charge $500, they will complain about it and think it's too much. And the reality is, for the consumer, they should just be picking two. Okay, what do you want? Do you want cheap? Cheap is going to get you a certain result, and with cheap you can have cheap and fast, or you can have cheap and good, but it's not going to be fast. It's going to take a long time. So if you want a good, fast, professional result, you pay. That's the reality. But one of the things that I use a lot, and I tend to draw this out as a diagram so it may not come across quite so well on a podcast, is try and teach advisors to have a conversation at the very front end of the engagement. So at the front end of the engagement, when you're first meeting with consumers, sit down and position the expectation and position what it is you do for them. And it doesn't take long, and it'll take me maybe a minute to talk about. And the conversation, as I would do it with a consumer over here, sort of goes like this. You're probably going to do okay in life with or without me. You're probably going to get a job, save some money, do your superannuation retirement savings. You're eventually going to get a mortgage from the bank. You're eventually going to pay that off, and you're going to own a home. You're going to have some net worth. You're going to do okay. That's the typical story for most consumers. They do okay with or without us. Agree? And everyone goes, yeah, sure. And what we've done straight away there, just breaking out of the role play, is we've positioned ourselves on the same side of the table as the consumer, because we haven't challenged their beliefs. We've actually helped them buy into their belief set that things are going to go along okay. The next part of the conversation is, but you know as well as I do that when you put a plan in place of any sort, you get a better result. If you decide to plan how to pay your mortgage off faster yourself, you know you're going to do better. Yep, that's right. You know that if you plan a little bit of a budget and you work out what you're spending money on and you stop spending money on some stupid things, you're going to get a better result, don't you? Yep. So you know that planning adds value. Yes. Everyone agrees with that. Okay. One more point, and because this country's sports mad, everyone over here buys into straight away the analogy of talking about, you know, their rugby team, the All Blacks. The Kiwis love their rugby team. So we use the All Blacks as an example, but you could do it just as well with ice hockey or anything else. And the example that we use is, so we know that the people who are at the top of their game in anything, the very best performers, the ones who get the best results and have the best lives, they have coaches, don't they? Now, they don't have coaches to teach them how to be good people. They have coaches to hold them accountable, to provide objectivity, and to provide extra technical knowledge that they don't have. So even the All Blacks have this range of specialist coaches on how to think better on the paddock, how to play a little bit better, how to be more strategic. Yeah? And everyone bought, yeah, absolutely. And the All Blacks are better for that, correct? Yes. Okay, so here's the thing. You're probably going to do okay in life with or without me. But planning adds value. Just having a plan, even a plan that you put together, creates additional value. Agree? Everyone agrees with that. And you know that if you bring an expert coach in to help work on the plan with you, you get a much better strategic plan that gets you where you want to be much faster and gives you a far higher likelihood of getting the outcome you want. Agree? And everyone agrees with it. And what you've done at the front end is position both the planning process and the coaching element.
Now, I'm going to jump in here by challenging you on this, because in the States specifically, there are so many people, Tony, who offer free planning. So how would you pivot if I was that person who agreed with everything that you said there, but said, hey, you know, I can go to the Morgan Stanley guy or the Wells Fargo guy or the Ameriprise person, and they'll do it for free.
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing's for free. Everyone knows that. Nobody's a fool. Everyone we're talking to as a consumer knows that nothing comes for free. So here's the question I always throw back to them. Think about this. The people who are doing the free planning for you are still eating and living in a house somehow. So somebody is paying them. The question you need to ask yourself is, who are they working for? Because whoever is paying them is who they're working for.
Mm.
So you have a fundamental choice. your choice is, do you want to pay the person that's working for you, or do you want somebody else to pay the person to work for their agenda? Which one do you want?
Oh, boy. I'm already.
It usually gets people thinking, and they go like, so like free is not free. Of course it's not free. It always comes at someone's cost, and I'll just sort of jump onto that at the moment. I try to avoid and train people to avoid using the word free when they're talking about their services or their plans or their initial interviews or initial meetings. Don't use the word free. Use the phrase like, it's at my cost, because it does come at a cost. For you to go off and meet the consumer in your car after hours, or for them to come and meet you in your office that you're paying for, somebody's paying for it. It's coming at a cost. So don't hide behind it and don't say it's free. It's not free. Let them know straight away there's value immediately in the fact that you are investing your money, your time, your expertise, your resources in doing something for them. It's at my cost. It's not free.
How often do people come up after they have heard you speak or after you've coached them, and they look at you or they talk to you over the phone or Skype or whatever and say, you know, Tony, this shift in the mindset shift that you challenged me to do absolutely changed my practice?
I get that often. To be fair, I struggle and still struggle to this day to get a lot of advisors to make that mental leap. And it's a confidence issue as much as anything else. But because a lot of advisors have bought into this decades of the value is in the product, and they've been told that repeatedly by consumers and by their suppliers and everyone around them in the industry. So it's a big mental leap for advisors to do. But actually, it's not difficult. All you've got to do is have the courage, I guess, to have that first conversation with a client. And the courage is not the courage to let the words come out of your mouth. The courage that's required is the courage to let a consumer go, let a client go, by saying, I'm worth something. Sure. And them going, no, you're not. So being prepared to say, well, okay, I'm not prepared to work for nothing. That's where the courage element comes in. But once advisors make that step and they're willing to have that conversation, it is a complete mind shift, and it changes your perspective of yourself, your perspective of what you do. It changes their perspective of you and what you do. And all it comes down is the courage to have that conversation about, this is how I work and this is what I do. And one of the ways, I guess, one of the techniques that I teach a lot of advisors to use, and it's been incredibly successful and it works very, very well, is to simply map out at the front end, again, of that relationship with a prospective new client. But you can do this with existing clients as well. To sit down and map out the front and say, look, there are fundamentally three things that I could do for you. The first thing I can do is put together a plan. The second thing I could do is put in place anything that's recommended in that plan. And the third thing that I can do is provide ongoing service and work and reporting to you. So there are three quite different things that I can do for you as an advisor. And you've got choices along the way. You don't have to decide today or at the front end that you want all three. The front end decision is simply, do you want me to do a plan or not? Now, the planning part is just like working with an architect or with a lawyer or with an accountant. Fundamentally, what we do is we sit down, we find out what it is you want to achieve. We then go away, do all the work in the background, the analysis. We come up with a strategic plan on how you can achieve what it is you want to achieve. And just like working with an architect, you pay for time and expertise. Now, you're not obliged, if you were working with an architect, to go and build the house just because they've come up with the plans. It's your choice. You can decide to build the house or not. You can decide to put those plans in your kitchen drawer. You can decide to take those plans to a builder you like personally. It's the same with financial planning. You can decide to do nothing. You can decide to follow our advice. You can decide to follow our advice and use us to help you put it in place, or you could take it somewhere else. So in the first instance, the only decision you need to make is, do you want strategic and objective advice on how to achieve your goals? If you do, you pay for time and expertise. If you then want us to help you put in place any recommendations, that's a different engagement.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that's how I charge fees.
So you're compartmentalizing it. That's brilliant to have them understand that there's three distinct. And I love the architect's analogy there. That's What are you thinking, Kirk? I can hear your gears turning in your brain right now.
Look, to be blunt, I'm a sales creature. I really am through and through. And It's not like I just love selling anything to anyone. No, there's a distinct professional and ethical overlay, mm-hmm. in that you've got to be doing the right thing for the person that you're working for, because, you know, I live in a small country, a small community where, you know, we don't have 6 degrees of separation. We've got about 1 degree of separation, and word gets around pretty quick.
Yeah.
If you're a rogue, or if you're misleading people, or just trying to flog them stuff they don't need, you know, so you can't play in that space. You've got to be ethical. You've got to be professional. You've got to be working in the interest of the client, no doubt about that. Huh. And more importantly, apart from the moral and the ethical obligation to do that, it's actually just good business. If you keep doing things well and you stay focused on doing the best you can for the client, boy, the referral and the word of mouth marketing generation that goes with it fixes your prospecting problems for life, yeah. especially in a small country. So I overlay everything I'm saying, but by saying that while I'm a sales creature and I love getting out there and having that little mental challenge of how am I going to make this work? You know, you've got to make it work on the basis of it being the right thing for the client.
I've had the pleasure over the years of working with some really great financial advisors. And one of the things, I know a number of them who've been part of fee-based planning for quite a few years. And some are still in the business, some are not. One of the things that I think separates the advisors who understand, like Tony, like what you're talking about and being able to implement it, there's a difference between some of them get it and do it, and some of them might get it but can't do it. I'm just wondering if you experienced that and if you can help advisors understand, because my guess is you had a very eloquent, mm-hmm. well laid out plan of how to do that. I've heard some variations of that, not by many or not often. I really like how you set it up. I'm curious if there's a way to help advisors implement that. Like, how do they take what you've just shared and actually make it happen? I know you use the word courage, but beyond that, maybe.
It's always helpful if you've got some presentation tools. And presentation tools, realistically, serve two purposes. Purpose one is they're a prop for the advisor who is not yet entirely confident about how they're going to present this. And point two is that by turning it into a visual presentation, it's far more likely to resonate with the person that you're trying to talk to. There's no doubt, and I can't remember exactly what the statistics are, but there's no doubt that the overwhelming majority of people pick up new information and understand it far more rapidly when it's presented visually. So I put together things like that, three things I can do for you. I put that together as a little PowerPoint, which runs for about, I think, 6 or 7 slides. And you just click your way through it with the clients. And because it's visual and all of the stuff that I was just saying is there on screen being reinforced for them, they get it straight away. It makes sense, makes perfect sense. And it's got little things in that says, you know, and the client can walk away at this point, and I charge a fee there, and I charge a commission here. And often when I'm talking about commission, I'm still coming back to where the listeners can get a copy of this presentation. But when I come back to the commission, I often refer to that as a success fee. And the reason why, and I explain it this way to clients, the reason why I like commission when it comes down to implementation in particular is because it's success fee based. Now, fundamentally, I don't know if it works exactly the same in Canada or in the States, but fundamentally over here, if we were to use insurance as an example, if a consumer went to an insurer to buy some insurance directly and there was no advisor involved, they would pay X dollars. If they went through the advisor, they would still pay X dollars. There's no change in price. So the commission is built into the product pricing, and if the consumer goes directly to the institution keeps the commission. So it's more profitable for them. But fundamentally, they get exactly the same price for exactly the same product. So one of the things that I like to point out to consumers is success fee, commission-based, works for everyone because the supplier doesn't have to pay any more. You don't have to pay anything directly. And I get to leverage my time because it pays better than an hourly rate. And I only get paid if we get an outcome that you're happy with and the insurer's happy with. So if everyone gets the win-win they're looking for, I get paid. If nobody gets the win-win they're looking for, I don't get paid, and that's my risk. And that's one of the reasons why I like that success fee-based model when it comes to implementation. Now, if people do want to get a copy of that, I have a number of social media accounts out there. Just Google me and you will find me, I'm sure. One of the ones that you should look for is something called SlideShare, which is owned and run by LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And on SlideShare, there is just a number of things like that that I just put out there for people to download and use. So you can certainly go out and download the presentation on This is how I position the fee-based work plus commission-based work plus the ongoing servicing. You can just download it. You can personalize it, put your own corporate logos and colors and things in there and change the wording and terminology. It's out there available for the world.
And we'll make sure that we put all of your social media handles and links in so that people can connect with you directly. I want to switch gears, though,
sure.
Because the idea of this podcast is we're a marketing and branding company. How do you communicate this on the front end, Tony? So a lot of what you're talking about is the back end sales. I've already got butts in seats, and here's how you position these things, which are brilliantly positioned. How do you recommend that our financial services professionals try to start communicating that on the front end so that they don't have so much to overcome when they're sitting face to face with a client?
Yeah, I've got a lot of thoughts around that as well. But you're probably not going to like the answer to this. In today's world, I think it's a real slow burn process, and volume is the name of the game. It's not about one-to-one marketing so much, which is what we had traditionally done, say, 20 years ago with a lot of cold calling and going out and banging on doors of businesses and things like that. What we've got to do now is build a leveraged system that ties into the way that consumers buy today. So our marketing processes have got to be focused firstly on looking great in search, because even if you've been referred, consumers will still Google you. They will still want to check you out. So you've got to look great in search. You've got to get your digital basis absolutely spot on, you know, things like your LinkedIn profile, your website, and so on and so on. So you've got to have good digital presence. And then you've got to tap into the power of email marketing, I believe, because email is your link between having great online presence and being able to push out and communicate and engage with a large volume of people in a really cost-effective way. So your important points are digital presence, email marketing with a great email list or CRM system, and that becomes the basis for how you get to the market. But your marketing message, your marketing position, you need to settle in on what it is you want to be known for. Now, a lot of people will talk about you needing to be seen as an expert, and that's not necessarily true. In a country like ours, and I'm sure this is true in many, many parts of many countries, but in a country like ours, we've got these massive urban populations. You know, like we've got a grand total of 5.5 million people in New Zealand, and 3.5 million of them are in one city. So we've got 2 million scattered around the rest of the country, and in fact, over two islands. There's only 1 million of them in the biggest of the islands. So, you know, you can drive for hours without seeing people in some parts of this country. Now, that means for an advisor who lives in a place like that, certainly in some parts of the world, the best thing you can do is be quite holistic and be a general practitioner, because you're trying to appeal to a really wide community with really wide and varying interests. But you've got to decide what it is you want to be known for, whether you want to be known as that general practitioner, holistic planner, or whether you want to be known as an expert or a specialist in a particular field. You've got to decide at the front end what it is you want to be known for. And then the rest of your engagement, the rest of your marketing, the rest of your positioning needs to be focused on promoting that. And you do need to get into the concept of engaging with the world and delivering value first around your chosen area of expertise if you want to become someone, becomes a go-to person that generates a lot of word-of-mouth marketing.
Kirk, it sounds like Tony's been listening to some of our podcasts here. What do you think about all of that?
I think Tony's got his own ideas. Tony's been walking the marketing walk for a long time now. That's how we know about Tony. He's all over social media. He's a great everything he does is professional. And that's the way it goes. I mean, you said it really well. You have to look good in search. When somebody decides that, you know, there's an opportunity for them to work with you, if you don't look good everywhere. So it's not just showing like look good in Google and organized there with your My Google Business listing. It's things like when they get to your site, do you look good? Do you make any sense? Are you relevant? You know, are you sharing content? Are you a thought leader or are you a follower? You know, do you have philosophies, processes? I mean, just goes on and on, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I agree with all of those points. And if I was going to criticize advisors, and it's a massive generalization, but if I was going to criticize advisors on this topic, it's while a lot have tentatively bought into the idea that I must have a website or I must have a LinkedIn profile, they then do nothing with it. And what they create is this static position, which is fundamentally no different to a billboard on the side of a highway. Nothing ever changes and people drive past it and it's boring. It's absolutely uninteresting and it generates no traffic. So what they've got to do is get into the mindset of, while I've got to look good online, it's not a one-time thing. I've got to be consistent everywhere I am online. I've got to be constant, and I've got to be constantly evolving. There's got to be freshness. There's got to be content pushed out there. I've got to be changing things, especially if I want the search engines to find me. But they've got to get into this mindset that marketing, which is the very thing that fills the top of the funnel. You know, while we all love that bottom of the funnel stuff where we're one-to-one engaged with a prospective customer, that's the fun part. The marketing is the stuff that's filling the top of the funnel. And that's got to be a constant everyday work in progress.
Oh, it's nice that some of the, it's just nice that we're not the only people who think this way. It's nice that somebody entirely, almost exactly halfway around the world from where I and Kirk are located are saying the same things. And Tony, thank you very much for that. Obviously, you know, we did find you through your amazing social media presence, and we really wanted to get you on this podcast because your message is so important. And the super cool thing was, I knew you were going to be able to answer that question because you've answered that question in some of your social media posts. You have already made your thought leadership so transparent, but still making it so that people who want to implement, who really want to do what you were just talking about with the All Blacks, right? To take it to that next level, that you have to have somebody like you in the corner to help them hold accountable. You know, when you're talking about professional athletes, and I love that analogy, by the way, I used to use that all the time when I had my own coaching company. It's a lot of those All Black players will not only have a strength coach, but they'll have a, you know, they'll have a, even a PR coach, right? They'll have somebody, you know, hey, what happens if somebody sticks a microphone in your face, and they role play? And I loved hearing you do that when you said, hey, I'm going to step out of this role play for a second. Practice is so important across all lines of what Tony is saying here, whether you're filling up the front end of your funnel, as he was just talking about with good marketing, or when you're sitting face to face with somebody and you're talking about your value, or when you're reminding people of that value after you've been in a relationship for a long time. All of you should sit down and think to yourself, when is the last time I practiced that? And when I do practice that, shouldn't I have somebody who is a pro like Tony that can hear how I'm saying things and make it so that it comes across even better? So Tony, man, I'm telling you, I'm so absolutely happy that we had you on the podcast today. Any sort of closing thoughts before we wrap it up?
I've got an idea.
Oh, you
here.
Do? Okay.
Tony, how much value do you think being really sound at marketing has on valuing you as an advisor? Not you, but in a valuing advisor.
It's almost unquantifiable. The difference between mastering your marketing and mastering your brand and controlling your brand and engaging with the market actively and consistently and constantly. The difference in value between doing that and being the typical advisor that tries to focus on transactional approach and not valuing themselves properly is you will still be in business in 5 years' time. That's the difference.
So how did you build?
Bill won't be in business in 5 years' time, I don't think.
Yeah, so when you were building your company up to 6,000 clients, 25 staff, how important was marketing?
Oh, it was everything. That's how you get there. Now, to be fair, we did buy some small client bases along the way, but that was a relatively minor element of it. Mostly it was done organically, and the only way you do that is through leveraging marketing well. And if you can't do that, you don't build a big or a profitable business quickly. And big or profitable can be two different things, because I built big that wasn't profitable, and then I figured out how to make it profitable. Big and profitable don't necessarily go together.
You know what the first thing that happened in the U.S. just went through, in Canada too, to be honest, over the last couple of years have been tumultuous with the DOL in Canada, CRM2. And, you know, going fee-based and regulators changing the game. And there's been a lot of change. But do you know what goes first in for advisors in their business?
Yeah.
What's the first thing they stop doing? Well,
the discretionary spending on the marketing stuff, because it doesn't produce an immediate return next week.
It blows my mind. It has for a lot of years. And I'm not trying to, you know, go off here. But I still am very surprised. When we stop marketing ourselves, it's not good for our business. after a couple of months, even as much good stuff, as much brand and marketing equity as we've built up as an organization, when we get too busy and we slow, we'll have a lull. It happens. Yes,
precisely. And it's no different to, and again, when talking to advisors and this question comes up, you know, should I spend money on that or should I not, or should I do more of this? Actually, we've got enough clients there at the moment. Okay, let's go back to advisory skills 101. You know that there is a fundamental requirement for you to stay busy on some core activities if you want your diary to stay full. So you need to be constantly talking to prospects. You need to be constantly talking to your clients if you want your diary to be full, right? And that's a sales activity. And they go, yep, we know that. And you know that when you stop making those phone calls to your prospects and clients for a couple of weeks, the diary gets really empty, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah. So what do you do about it? Well, we pick the phone up and we start going again. And how does that work out usually? Well, it gets a bit hit and miss for a while until we get back into the groove, until we're back into a pattern of keeping the activity constant. So here's the point. The point is, if you want constant output, as in constant performance, constant production, constant revenue, but you want constant outputs, you've got to keep the inputs constant. It's the only answer.
So here's another theory. I'm just really hard on advisors there for not, you know, consistently investing in their marketing and quickly, you know, turning off marketing to go focus on other things in their business, which are really important. But I'm gonna say this too, because I think it's really fair to all the advisors listening. Is that I believe that marketers have been extremely irresponsible, and not always for the wrong reasons, but sometimes it's just they don't know any better, at offering all kinds of ideas and thoughts and tactics and false strategies or incomplete strategies on what the heck advisors need to do in the first place. And that's one of the things that I've been so focused on doing. I mean, the last 5 to 10 years, and are getting so much better at it, is, you know, what is the mindset you need to have? What should you actually focus on in your marketing? What's going to last? What's going to sustain you? What's going to give you short-term and long-term success and things like that? But, you know, my feeling is that a lot of marketers have done a disservice to this industry. I'm curious how you feel about that.
I could not agree with you more. I refer to it as shiny object syndrome. And it's no different to the challenge we have with clients. Clients get distracted by whatever the latest investment fad is, or, you know, hey, suddenly I should be in that Bitcoin thing, shouldn't I? Because that's what everyone's doing and people are making a fortune out of it. And they lose sight of the objective. They lose sight of the strategy. And the reality is they start bouncing around from thing to thing to thing, and inevitably they waste money, they lose money, they make poor decisions because they've lost sight of what matters. And it's the same with marketers, to financial advisors and in financial services. The advisors, because generally they don't have great in-depth marketing skills, they do get distracted by the shiny objects that come bouncing along. Suddenly there's this fabulous new way of reaching consumers and they throw thousands and thousands of dollars at it, only to find out that it was only part of a marketing solution. It was never the full answer. So they've got to stay quite strategic and understand what the game is. They've got to understand for themselves what it is they want to be known for, the sort of clients they're going to try and reach, what their strategy is for reaching those clients, and how they're going to engage with them and build that position of value and reputation over time.
And with that, Tony, thank you very, very much for your time today.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
And for Kirklow, this is Matt Halloran in the Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. Make sure that you go to tonyvidler.com, which is V-I-D-L-E-R, tonyvidler.com. And sign up for his newsletter. It pops up. He's got a great website. It pops up and you can go ahead and get his thought leadership right in your inbox. We'll also make sure that we put his links to his social profiles. And if you have not liked our podcast here yet, please click on subscribe below, because that way, every time we come up with a new podcast, like our wonderful guest today with Tony, it'll show up right in your inbox on your listening device. So with that, for everybody here, this is Matt Halloran. We'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.